Your name, please?
Paul Newman.
And your occupation and position?
Philanthropist.
Mr. Newman, what, in your opinion, makes a good movie?
My viewpoint is that people really make a good movie. You can have all the techniques and everything, but ultimately, it's the examination of the person that is interesting.
This is Viewpoint, a series of unrehearsed and personal interviews with people from all walks of life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest is Paul Newman, distinguished award-winning actor, film producer, and director. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series, Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Mr. Paul Newman.
Thank you
for visiting us here in Westport, Connecticut. When you start thinking about making a movie, is there any special thing you look for, first of all?
Well, I only have one experience as a director and several experiences as an actor. I really look for the possibility of inhabiting a character and populating a movie more than I do sometimes in its content.
Does a movie have to have a message of any kind?
No, I think it's better if it does, but it doesn't have to. And it's marvelous because there are great misconceptions about motion pictures. HUD, for instance, was supposed to be, is in my viewpoint, of course, the kind of a man that has no feeling for the community, has no hook into the community, is basically totally selfish. And it was misread by a lot of the young people who saw in him a real anti-hero. And he had all the superficial graces, and he did his work well, and he was marvelous with the ladies, etc. And they took that for something that was very attractive superficially, and I wanted him to have all of those superficial graces. But he was, you know, that great old line, rotten to the core, Maud. But people misread that, and as a result, he was... they read something into the script that wasn't there and that I didn't want to put in there.
Mr. Newman, who in the practical making of a motion picture decides finally what the picture will be about, what the characters are going to be and what the storyline's going to be?
Well, I think it varies. I think with a strong producer, I think the producer then indicates the area in which the film will go. Sometimes a screenwriter just picks up a piece of material and writes it on speculation and then sells it to a producer, at which point the screenwriter. But I do believe that the best experiences are really community experiences where the director, the producer, the actors, the screenwriter, the film editor, all make a massive contribution to the film, with each person serving as more of a trigger than as a dictator, that it really becomes a community experience.
How about the people that are putting up the money? Do they have any real say in the creative part of choosing?
Well, again, that varies. In our film, Rachel, they had nothing to say about it. They had no, literally no privileges at all. We had some interesting fights on Rachel, I must say, and it's to the extent. Now, for instance, most people would think that an agent, you know, which is has a reputation for being a parasitic, kind of influence. When we finished it, sometimes contracts are drawn up months after a picture is actually finished. The letter of telegram, the telegram of agreement is basically set out, outlining the basic agreement, but the contracts drawn up in legal terms are not really settled sometimes until, many months after you've finished shooting the film. So when my agent came back and said, well, all of the things have been written out in legal form. The one thing that is a problem is your television cut. And they will not allow you to cut the picture for television. And I said, David, no one is going to touch the film with me. And that was apparent from the very beginning, I mean, in spirit. And I'm not going to allow that to happen. He said, well, you cannot have television cuts. The networks will not give you a television cut. The company that he represents is called Creative Management, which is my agent. And he went into the big meeting at Warner Brothers, and I don't know if anybody knows that the picture cost $780,000, which is...
That's low for a movie, isn't it?
Well, it's almost impossibly low for a movie. So he walked into the meeting at Warner Brothers and said, Mr. Newman refuses to give up his cut for television. And everybody laughed and said, well, if Otto Preminger and George Stevens and Elia Kazan, you know, don't have television privileges, why should Mr. Newman have television privileges? He said, well, we have no reason why he should have cutting privileges, but he refuses to give up his television cut. And they laughed and chuckled. And so David said, well, then you have the option. Creative management will write you a check for $780,000 and we'll just take the picture away from you. So there was a lot of scurrying going on around in the corridors of Warner Brothers, and they finally gave in on it.
And when you say television cut, what do you mean by that?
I mean the cut that finally appears on television.
So that the picture will be just the way you want
it
to be?
Yes, they will not be able to run the picture at all. They will not be able to sell the picture if they want material out that I don't want out.
Does the character or the type of person spiritually make any difference in their ability to act? The kind of person they are, does that make any difference?
Now that's an interesting question. Yes, I really do think that that a person's ethics and morals and makeup have something to do with what he is as an actor. Now then you have the absolute reverse of that. You see the person who is something really and who has spent his whole life covering up what he is and therefore can display that on the screen very effectively. But it is because he was one kind of a person that he was forced to behave in a certain area that he has found comfort in the betrayal of his own personality, really, to put it on the screen.
Do you think the average person who goes to the movie is a good judge of whether the picture is good or not?
I think they're getting better. I think they're getting better because they've had a kind of avalanche of entertainment on television. I think they're getting a little bit more particular. I must say, I was very heartened because when we started on the film, I thought we would have a little tiny critical kind of success, and that it would be kind of a purging of my feeling of putting my taste on the line, and the kind of thing that I felt was important to film. And Judith Crist, who was the critic for the Tribune and is now writing for Today.
Yes, we had her on Viewpoint a while back.
It was marvelous because she went to the film and she said, I went to a Broadway house on 47th Street and Broadway in New York City and was astonished not only that the people, that the theater was, you know, packed, but that the people treated it with the kind of Chekhovian reverence. And I can't think of anything that would be more touching or more moving for me to find that tough Broadway kind of hip audience that really got involved in the life of this spinster. So that I think is probably the most rewarding aspect of the film.
Mr. Newman, going on to another area, are there any particular problems with being a celebrity? This is something that I'm sure is interested to many people.
Well, some people kind of bathe they kind of feed off of, a certain kind of quality of being a celebrity and being noticed. I don't. I really don't like it. I don't think I have any obligations to the public other than to perform as best I can and to perform as honorably as you can inside your own profession. But people sometimes feel, I think, that if they paid a buck and a half or $2 to see a film, that they have an investment in you and that they now are part and parcel of the corporation which you represent and that they can go to director's meetings and tell you how to behave and pat you on the back and everything. And I don't much care for that because I don't think sensitive people do that with people that they don't know. Now, why I should have to give up my privacy and my anonymity because I'm an actor is a rule that someone made back in the 30s or the 20s, and I didn't make the rule, and I don't know why I have to live by that particular rule when I wasn't really involved when it was, developed. I respect my privacy. I mean, the thing that was really marvelous was the time that I grew a beard, and I had come back from some distant location or something and thought, ah, at least I'll be able to walk down the streets now without people giggling and pointing and so forth. And I just got out of my apartment in my beard and my sunglasses, and two little girls came by and said, oh, look, there's Paul Newman in a beard.
So you can't win either way.
You really can't.
How about celebrities going into politics, whether they be actors or other forms of celebrity? Do you think this is a good thing?
Well, I don't know whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think we carry a lot more weight than we may be entitled to carry. But by the same token, you have to ask the question, give up my citizenship when I became an actor. If I feel very, very strongly about these things, then I don't see why I should be restricted, you know, merely because I carry more. I apologize going into it by saying I know I carry more weight than I should, but I try to keep informed. I think my credentials are as good as the average citizen, and I don't know why I shouldn't work for the things that I believe in.
What are the satisfactions you get from doing the kind of work that you do, Mr. Newman?
I'm not sure. I really am not. It is work, and sometimes very, very hard work. It is not all cocktail parties. And when we're on location, we're up at 5:30, and we get back at 7:30 and see film. And so it's really six solid days of 12, 13, 14 hours a day. And when you're directing, it's even, you know, more than that, really. And the difference, I think, if you're working on the stage, the satisfaction occurs literally every evening because you constantly deal with an audience. And either the audience on that particular evening really goes with it or they don't, and so that you're either satisfied or not satisfied. When you're working on film, you can have no real sense of completion until the project is completely over and you've seen it either in its rough form or in its polished form, and that you can recognize that either you were able to create something or that the film says something that you're proud of. But it's a much later kind of experience. You don't really get that every day as you do in the theater.
How about working on television? Is this different from the other forms?
I wouldn't work on television today.
Why not?
Well, because it's all film, for one thing. One always hesitates to say, remember the great old days, but in the 50s when I was in live television, it was there was a kind of vitality, a kind of freshness, the beginning of the examination of the psychological drama and the kitchen drama, etc. And that was a vital, it was a period that was filled with the playwright's vitality. The playwright has exhausted himself now, I think, in that era, and has nothing to replace it with. And he, as a result, leaves the actor kind of high and dry, because the actor can only be as good as the framework that the playwright puts it in.
Thank you very much, Mr. Paul Newman, for being with us and for giving us your viewpoint and for visiting us here in Westport.
It's been my pleasure.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview produced by the Division of Radio and Television of the Episcopal Church and presented in cooperation with the National Council of Churches as a news and public affairs program of this station. Today's guest was Paul Newman, distinguished award-winning actor, film producer, and director.